This wasn't the Chicago Teachers Union, also known as CTU's, first time striking. Back in 2012, CTU striked for over a week, demanding higher wages and better classroom conditions. However, even after the strike had ended, many of the issues plaguing Chicago public school students were mostly the same. Students were still struggling with oversized classrooms, police presence in schools, a lack of school nurses and counselors. Teachers were generally overworked and underpaid, still left vulnerable to district-wide layoffs. The second strike was a similar strand stance on the same issues. Teachers used their collective power to lobby for higher wages, as deserved, but also got huge wins for students. Classroom size caps, a nurse in every school, aid for homeless CPS students. Collective actions like unionizing are team efforts, but something particularly interesting was the Black women leadership helping coordinate organizing. CTU has a history of this, with former leaders like Karen Lewis, a Black woman. This time, they were coordinated in part by Stacey Davis Gates, the vice president of the CTU. In this podcast episode, we will take a deep dive into Black women political leadership, examining the leadership of Stacey Davis Gates and the impact of marginalized leadership generally. Does it make a difference? How critical is representation? What about Davis as an individual versus Black women leaders in Chicago currently, like Mayor Lori Lightfoot? In Act 1, we'll talk about Stacey Davis Gates and her personal, professional, and political journey. Act 2, we examine the impact of representation. Who is it for? How does it affect the outcome of politics? Act 3, we'll end with key takeaways about Black women leadership. What lessons have we learned and what is still needed? Stay tuned. Welcome back to our episode. Today we examine the trends and importance of Black women political leadership, highlighting a prominent Chicago political figure, Stacey Davis Gates. For those who don't know, Gates was the vice president of the Chicago Teachers Union, one of the largest labor unions and teachers unions in the country. She's a teacher, a mother, and stays in the south side of Chicago. We did an interview with her and took a deep dive into her journey and what it reflected about leadership generally. Gates is powerful. She's what I like to call a right fighter, someone who works to center justice and equity always. This is her speaking out against charter schools, as they have damaged education systems in Chicago and allowed the rich to not pay their fair share.
So charters, 1996 comes into Illinois. They basically said we could do it for less. We can get all of the bureaucratic nightmare out of the design of public education. Black kids, brown kids, poor kids who have not been afforded a quality education can finally get it, because the same people who ain't paying their taxes are the same people pushing this design, right? Because this is what's going to do it, not you paying your fair share.
But what caused Gates to be so impactful, powerful, when so many Black women are taught to take up less space? Based on my interview with her, it seemed like her childhood was always imbued for leadership.
Yeah, I was a competitive athlete for most of my life, starting in my childhood. And I participated in a lot of different activities as a kid. Attended church every Sunday and a few days during the week. And so opportunities for leadership were embedded in how my parents raised me.
Sports were a significant opportunity for her to be a leader. This is her describing what being a young competitive athlete taught her.
You know, there are many examples of, you know, figuring out how to persevere, coming back from injuries and still being able to, you know, get in a gym or in the weight room, and spend a lot of time there preparing yourself for the next competition or for the next season.
Moreover, she had a series of mentors in her life who made sure she knew her life is divinely ordered, that she was in a space that means she's supposed to be there. One of those key people were her grandmother.
My grandmothers, both of them, picked cotton in Mississippi and in Arkansas, and they always were very clear, both of them, about my position in life and in society and that it was no surprise that it was supposed to be what it is. And they would be the last people surprised about who I am today. I don't know how to say it. It was just always supposed to be.
But overall, she was raised by a village that filled her upbringing with love and community.
I mean, there are a lot of people in my life. Like, I come from a very loving group of people who pour confidence, love, compassion, a sense of justice into me. The people who share their stories, their motivation. I have a lot of aunts, I have a lot of uncles, my grandparents, you know, obviously my parents, and even my peer group from my cousins. You know, we all have a strong sense and embody love for each other. And if I'm honest about how this works, it works because I'm loved. It works because love was demonstrated in front of me on a very consistent basis. And that life in itself is unfair, it's unjust, but that the love that you have for family, for friends, for humanity is what that other things that sustain you, is the anchor in your space, in your life. And so things will always come and go, but you know, that love, that kinship, that's what
sustains you. That empowerment helps her throughout her political, professional, and personal journey. Despite going to a small, predominantly white institution in Indiana, Gates described resisting the feeling of, quote, not belonging in that space, unquote, which is a common experience among many Black women.
The problem with our society is that people don't feel like they belong in spaces where they absolutely belong. I'm rarely uncomfortable in spaces that are, look, I'm a Black woman and I'm in labor. You could choose to always be uncomfortable, but then that would mean that you're always uncomfortable in your work life. So you just kind of have to own the fact that you deserve to be in a space.
And lessons about who does and doesn't belong have also influenced her leadership style. Even in grassroots organizations like unions, hierarchies about whose needs are centered can exist. I myself witnessed this firsthand during my time in the Chicago Student Union, a student-led organization, or working to voice the needs of Chicago public students. Most of the time, I and others would argue about the needs to center and amplify students who went to more under-resourced schools compared to selective enrollment high schools. Gates has also thought about this dynamic and actively works to combat it, making sure that those who seek to maintain the status quo aren't fighting against the needs of students.
Well, you go on strike. You resist the marginalization of people's humanity, and that's what the strike ultimately was about, is that you get to talk about homeless students if I get to see these students in my classrooms every day. Like, you can't, like, the restrictions, the marginalization of our voice only comes from those who seek to maintain status quo. Those who want to make government bigger and more responsive to the people who need government, they encourage our voice. They encourage our fight. Those who want to maintain the status quo of austerity, of racist policy, of misogyny, those are the people who, you know, push back and fight against us. Those who want to see government have a response to the ills of our society, they help us find a way. They ally themselves with us. Figure it out together.
Within her advocacy, Gates discussed how she isn't immune from the hurt and pain from misogynoir, the intersection of violence against Black women and femmes.
misogyny in our world, the racism in our world does not impact me. It absolutely impacts me. And it is the hope of my ancestors, of the women, of the men who gave birth to my existence in this world that motivate me and help me persevere.
She also acknowledges that despite the positive work she's trying to do on the behalf of CPS students, not everyone is on her side. Chicago Mayor's Lori Lightfoot, a Black queer woman, has been very staunch in her opposition to CTU's demands for a nurse in every school. More recently, Lightfoot kept Gates out of the closing discussions regarding the contract, a fairly targeted move by the mayor as she allowed other union representatives to be present. I asked Gates about that dynamic during our interview, though she had a different way of seeing it entirely.
You know, like, how do I deal with another person getting in the way of, let me say it like this. There were tens of thousands of people on the street. It wasn't about me. It's never been about one person singularly. It is about the hundreds of thousands of students who need the Chicago Public Schools to provide a resource and a type of education that is empowering and freeing. That's number one. Number two, I get to be there because my members are there. And what cannot be stopped, what cannot be ignored, was the people outside of City Hall, even on that day, still rallying for a just and fair contract and resources for our school community.
Plus, as a teacher and a mom of children in CPS, she has personal stakes involved in the issue and wants to see more money and attention being invested.
Well, it's real. You know, I'm not talking about something someone told me. I'm, you know, providing narrative and leadership to an experience that my family is having at the same time other families are experiencing. The same thing. It's what it is. And so I think, obviously, that's one of the things that I think people pick up on is that my narrative is not that much different from other people's narratives because we're having a very similar experience. Doesn't make it better. It just makes it what it is.
Overall, the work is what keeps her and others motivated, but it is the most important part. As students and people who are interviewing on their behalf.
I just think that what we're fighting for universally is to make sure that children have what they need so that they are able to be complete human beings, if you will. So asking for, fighting for, and winning a social worker in every single school means that students who are growing up in communities where violence is ongoing and persistently traumatic may have space to begin to deal with that trauma and, you know, put it in a place where they can continue to keep it moving. That having a nurse in every single school means that, like, the attention to your physical and your mental and emotional well-being is a priority in the school community as well. Look, every single student that comes into our school community, they come with their own space, their experience. And sometimes that those experiences and places that do not regard their humanity has been traumatic and marginal. And then they come to us, and as educators, as human beings, we are tasked with providing them with refuge, care, comfort, education, instruction. But you can't do that if the whole person is not being nurtured. And as a human being who's trying to reach another human being, I understand that. And because, you know, the vast majority of our members understand that, they're fighting hard to make sure that the students get that. You can't be in front of a person every single day and see that person needing a thing and ignore it. That actually is the problem in most of these spaces, is that you know, sort of leadership, the moneyed interest in our society would have us all ignore the reality of those who don't have, and our members can't do that. So that's why our fight has been so fierce and sharp, if you will, because you can't sit in front of people who need every day and be told to shut up and sit down or be quiet when you give voice to what they need.
Act 2. Welcome back. In this section of the podcast, we discuss more about Black women leadership generally and the different ways in which a person's personality makes them better suited for leadership. Across the globe, women are still lacking in leadership. According to a survey from the UN Women, women only make up 24.3% of parliamentarians across the planet, despite being 50% of the population. In 2019, only 11 women were head of state, and only 12 were head of government. It's hard to define the characteristics of what makes a good leader. People all over the world have different understandings of what they want from leadership. According to a survey from CEOs and researchers on leadership, reported by Forbes magazine, a leader must be able to support the team, push people to do their best, and generally make tough calls. Not to mention, expectations for our leaders can vastly change based on what identity they are. While many people want a leader who is decisive and assertive, when those qualities are seen in Black women, they can be interpreted as being aggressive. Many people, especially for men, want leaders that have some kind of family life. However, when women are mothers, questions are asked like, how will she balance her home life and her work duties? Isn't it interesting how they never ask men that question? Obviously, because of access to education and leadership positions and biases against them, it's harder for women, especially women of color, to obtain and keep leadership positions. But generally, how do they perform? Are they better than men? According to information I have learned in my Black Women Political Leadership class, women are more empathetic leaders. They are comfortable allowing emotions to influence decisions. If we're making decisions on humans, isn't that how it should be anyways? Moreover, women are better collaborators. While men are more likely to try and control conversations and negotiations, women are better listeners and not people collaborate. I wasn't surprised to hear any of this. I, as a woman who have been in political leadership roles, but also as someone who has quote-unquote watched men lead this country all my life, I'm sure women could do a better job. The question, though, is do the same statistics apply to Black women as political leaders, or are white women being used to frame the conversation? It's not that Black women couldn't be in leadership roles or can't do it, but rather that Black women are rarely given the ability to be in those spaces. Plus, when we are leaders, we're seen as aggressive, or if we shut up, so we'll be seen as better listeners, people don't view us as collaborators. It's almost as if when Black women engage in political leadership, we're expected to simply take them for the team or have the ideas but never be the face. Some examples are Senator Maxine Waters, Shirley Chisholm, and other Black women who have stepped up and played political leadership roles, but been excluded. Even Stacey Davis Gates, who was willing to put aside Lori Lightfoot's malice in favor of a larger cause of equitable education. These are all examples of women taking them for the team. Black women play critical roles behind the scenes, but are never given the space to be the face of movements. Plus, they take heavy criticism when they do. Black women can be and are qualified leaders. Maybe it's time America acknowledge that and provides with the resources and space to engage in leadership roles, hopefully, including the attention and censoring that comes with that. Act 3, we return with some key takeaways from our interview with Chicago Teachers Union Vice President Stacey Davis Gates and more about Black women in political leadership generally. Black women can and should be leaders. We have the capacity to work with others, but also hold people accountable when they fail to show up. Moreover, we are passionate about our chosen interests, meaning we have a genuine interest in topics of study and other projects. Gates even talked about this, and when asked about her morals and upbringings, she talks about how it influences her politics. The question becomes, when will we put Black women in leadership roles, especially if we are tired of watching history repeat itself with the same old problems because our leadership hasn't changed? Black women experience the unique intersection of racism and misogyny. We are sidestepped, looked over, forgotten, and hated. But as Stacey Davis Gates and other elders have come before her demonstrate, Black women, specifically when they center love as our moral compass, are integral parts of our governance that must be influenced and cannot be forgotten.